He's uploading the virus.
Eagle One, the package is being delivered.
Hacking cars is a Hollywood trope, but it's real. And thanks to the Internet of Things, sometimes you don't even need to hack the car directly. A hacker that goes by the alias L&M found a way to hack almost 30,000 accounts of people who use two GPS tracking apps. By taking control of the accounts, the hacker not only accessed the user's personal information, including names, emails, and home addresses, but he also gained the ability to kill their engines. The two GPS tracking apps are called ProTrack and iTrack. They're made by two Chinese companies that not only sell physical internet-connected GPS tracking devices, but also the apps to monitor the cars. In other words, it's the Internet of Things inside a car with default passwords. What could possibly go wrong?
As this SUV drives down the highway, these two hackers are pulling off the unthinkable.
No matter what happens, don't panic.
Taking control of it wirelessly, even turning the wheel.
Today we're here with Motherboard reporter Lorenzo Franceschi Bicchirai about this hack, which really sounds like a rejected script from a Black Mirror writer's table. I'm Ben Maku, and this is Cyber. So Lorenzo, you got a bit of a scoop this week on something that I think a lot of security researchers, at least, and a lot of people are interested in, because it's something we all use, cars. It's a car hack. So explain, what did you find?
Yeah, so a couple of weeks ago, a hacker that I've been in touch with here and there messaged me saying, hey, I hacked two GPS tracking companies, and not only I can monitor thousands of cars all over the world, but I can also like kill their engines.
And kill their engines?
Yeah. And initially my response was like, okay, you're full of shit. But then I talked to him and I dug into this story, and yeah, I mean, probably he was telling the truth. So what happened here is that he was able to figure out a way to hack into the accounts of users and customers of these two GPS tracking companies. One of them is called ProTrack. The other one is called iTrack. They're both owned by larger Chinese companies. They're not related to each other, but the platform that they use is the same. We don't know exactly why, but probably they have the same third-party provider of software. But anyway, the hacker figured out that every customer, as a default, has a password of 123456.
Which is like classic don't do that password making.
Yeah. It's so dumb. And so he figured that out, and then he realized that he could use the API for the two apps to essentially brute force or guess all the usernames. So he just fed the API with a script and like randomly tried every username he could come up with, or rather his program could come up with, and tried to log in with the default password 123456. This way he harvested, he says, around 30,000 accounts, which means not only he got the information that the users had within their accounts, but he also logged in as them. So he could, check out their fleet of cars. And these apps also give you the ability to stop the engine. The way it works is that, let's say that...
Which is, by the way, one of the most, typical car hack worst fears, almost like equated to getting access to the power grid and turning the lights out. This is like getting into cars and killing their engines when they're on a highway or when they're driving in a street.
Yeah, that's kind of like probably one of the nightmare scenarios in InfoSec, right?
Because it's like one of the craziest apocalyptic things.
Yeah, like we've seen in movies, it's starting to be like a trope for hacking movies, or act like Fast and Furious, I think, had a car hack in the last movie.
No one's ready for this.
I want every chip with a zero-day exploit in a 2-mile radius around that motorcade now.
There's over 1,000 of them.
Hack them all.
So in this case, the hack was not that dangerous as far as we can tell, because the way that this works is that if you have, let's say, a fleet of cars, so you're like a company that sells tours, or you have a cab company or something, you can buy GPS trackers, like actual physical hardware devices. You put them in your car and you connect them to the engine. So these devices are now, some of them at least, are connected to the internet. So both the companies that got hacked here not only provide the apps, but they also provide the hardware. So you buy their GPS tracker, you install it in your car, and if you want, you can connect it to the engine. And the apps allow you to stop the engine if you want. So, like, I think that the use case is the driver tries to steal the car or the car gets stolen, gets lost, whatever. The good news is that at least for one model that we were able to verify, you can only kill the engine if the car is going under 20 kilometers per hour or 12 miles per hour.
That was kind of the case as well with the hack, the, you know, the famous Wired story about car hacking with Charlie Miller. It was the same thing in that case where it was they couldn't actually kill the engines at like 100 miles per hour or anything like that.
Yeah, I don't remember what was the limit there, but there was definitely some sort of fail-safe or limitation that made it a little bit less bad. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's still, I mean, it's still kind of creepy for sure because...
I mean, it's incredibly unnerving, I think. The way that this whole story is makes people think twice, you know? We're not going to be... We're at a point where cars are going to be increasingly on these types of networks. Not only that, we have, you know, the advent of smart cars that are just going to drive us around. This is, you know, what, only a few years away probably?
Yeah, probably. And even without like self-driving cars, like we probably don't realize, well, first of all, we don't realize that basically cars right now, even, you know, what the car that you get at Zipcar or whatever Hertz, those cars are essentially computers with wheels. And that doesn't mean that you should like freak out and think that, you know, someone is going to hack you while you're on your honeymoon or something. But it's still something that we need to grapple with and something that manufacturers need to grapple with. And to their credit, the major car manufacturers have done a lot of work securing their cars. You know, they hired security researchers. They, you know, they created security teams that did not exist before. But the problem in this case, in this story, was that it doesn't matter what car you have. If you install one of these GPS tracking devices and you use one of these apps, then it's kind of a supply chain hack, right? Like this guy hacked a third party that was inside these cars. And even though he could probably not kill anyone, luckily, and, you know, to his credit, the hacker said that he never tried to mess with the engines because that was not what he wanted to do and that was dangerous. But even if he didn't, even if he was not able to do that, he could like track cars all over the world. And that's probably something you don't want to do as if you have a, you know, one of these companies that uses one of these apps. So, I mean, it's kind of scary that today there's like companies that ship software with 123456 as password. I mean, that's irresponsible.
I mean, it's incredibly irresponsible, especially when, you know, InfoSec community has shamed users for doing stuff like that, let alone actual companies that create these accounts. Like, what are you thinking?
Yeah, it's insane. I mean, it's 2019, guys. Like, you cannot expect users to change their password without telling them to. I mean, I think we spoke about this in the podcast before. Like, the industry blames victims too much, right? And in this case, you could say, well, this is the user's fault. They kept their default password. But that's not the, I mean, the real problem is that the company allowed them to keep a default password. You know, like the way it should work is, okay, yeah, maybe when you create the account, you give them 123456 for whatever reason. I mean, you shouldn't. But even if you do that, then force a change of password after one day or, I don't know, right away, like something like that. Like,
I mean, the question becomes, like, where's the quality control?
I mean, it seems like there isn't. I contacted both companies and one of them did not respond to our emails. And the second one immediately went on the offense, which is a red flag right away. Like, they were like, why are you contacting our users? Are you involved with the hacker? Everything is fine. And it's like,
guys, like, really, in 2019, you're gonna come at me for this?
Yeah, and, you know, maybe there was something lost in translation because it's a Chinese company, so I don't want to read too much into their tone of an email. Like, you know, it was an email, but it definitely seemed a little bit like, who are you? Why are you asking all these questions? And are you working with the hacker? And it's like, you know.
No.
First of all, sit down. Like, your users are in danger right now, so maybe you should worry about that. So, yeah, I mean, going back to your question, the quality control was probably non-existent.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I guess it also does this whole hack makes you wonder, how realistic is that mass hack in the future of being able to hack tons of cars that are going over 50 miles per hour and, you know, killing the engine? Like, how possible is that going to be? Is it as science fiction as we like to think it is?
I think, in my opinion, that's very unlikely, unless some company does something really stupid. And I'm saying that it's unlikely because think about iPhones, for example. Like, we talked about this in a podcast a few weeks ago. Like, you can hack iPhones. Like, no one is denying that. And you're going to be able to hack cars. And, you know, that's always going to be possible because software will have bugs and hackers will find these bugs and exploit them. But one thing is to hack one single car. And one thing is to, like, target thousands at the same time. So, for example, we haven't seen a worm, like a virus worm, for iPhones. We haven't seen, like, a massive attack for iPhones. So if car manufacturers can take that model and replicate it, then they'll be able to limit the damage. Which is to say, again, probably someone will get killed by a hack in a car one day.
Or maybe already have.
But probably we will not see, like, hundreds of cars on the same highway, like, getting their engines killed all at once. Like, I think that was actually the plot of Fast and Furious.
Right. I mean, I remember there was all these conspiracy theories back in 2013 when journalist Michael Hastings was killed and his car had slammed against a wall, and all these people were saying, you know, this was a car hack and it was a conspiracy to kill him by the CIA. I mean, I would not want to play into conspiracy theories, but car hacks are possible.
Yeah, I mean, we saw it with that famous Wired article and video. Like, those guys, Charlie Miller and Chris Valasek, they just took a Jeep, I think it was. They started it and figured out that they could not only monitor, like, cars in real time, but they could take advantage of a bug in the system to kill the engine while the cars was running. And that led to that insane video where Andy Greenberg is driving down the highway and they start playing music on his entertainment system. And, you know, it's all laughs. And then, without telling him, they kill the engine while he's running on the highway. So, and, you know, that was sort of a controlled hack, but that was what could have happened, right? Like, that was not a stunt. That was not a demo. Like, there was a bug that was fixed eventually, but the bad guys could have found it too, you know? The good guys did.
Who is this hacker, L&M? What's he done before in the past?
He has hacked a bunch of a couple of stalkerware companies before. He doesn't want to say where he's from or who he is. He only goes by L&M. I don't know why. So he seems to be kind of like a random hacker in the sense of, you know, just a guy who likes to hack stuff. His methods are a little strange because, like, in this case, he reached out to the companies and said, hey, I hacked you. Do you have a reward for me? Like a sort of a bug bounty, which is not how bug bounties work. Like, you can't hack companies and then ask for a bug bounty. The hacker shared an email that the company sent him, and the company was like, we don't have that much money. Can you give us a low price? Which is ridiculously funny as well, but also kind of sad because, again, like, these companies are used by thousands of people. And for probably very sensitive stuff, you know, like their cabs or whatever, the cars in their trucks. So, yeah.
Do you see this type of hack increasing in the next few years?
I think so, because, again, like, I think car manufacturers are doing a decent enough job so far, but also we don't know exactly how good they are, right? Because it's all this is pretty new. Cars didn't used to be connected to the internet. GPS trackers did not used to be connected to the internet with, like, Android apps. So the chances that there's some companies out there cutting corners and, you know, using third-party developers that have no security training, it's pretty high. I mean, this seems what happened here. Like, these two Chinese companies outsourced the development of the app and did not realize that whoever developed the app was shipping it with a default password that anyone can guess, like literally anyone can guess. And not only anyone could guess it, it was mentioned in the API.
But I guess the other question is too, is the connected hardware that could come with a car that is smart as well, right? Like it's not just necessarily the engineering of the software in the vehicle as much as it is these, you know, third-party apps that come in and say, hook this up to the car and it can do this. Where's the quality control on them?
Yeah, I mean, it's both hardware and software. Like, if you think of a car as a computer on wheels, then you have to think about, okay, is this car getting updates? How is it getting updates? How long is it going to get updates? Because, you know, like, we change phones every 2-3 years. We change computers every few years. But people keep cars for a long time. So as these cars are getting connected to the internet, are they going to keep getting security updates? For how long? I mean, that's the big question, right? If I'm buying a car that's connected to the internet right now, is the manufacturer committing to patching it? And if yes, for how long? Will I have to pay for the patch or not? And if I have to pay for like the updates, maybe some people will not do it.
When you drive an automobile today, you are driving a big computer system that happens to have wheels and a motor.
In the case of the Wired article and that famous car hack, the car manufacturer issued patches. I think in that case, they sent out actual USB keys to customers so that they could update the software. And that was, I think, that was the first time that something like that had happened. But we're going to see it more and more. You know, your iPhone gets updates every 1 or 2 months, more or less. I mean, it's not regular, but like every year, obviously, there's a huge update, but throughout the year, you get updates as you go.
You know, you wonder if the government's going to get involved with sort of mandating some standards because, you know, unlike your cell phone doesn't blow up when you're listening to, I mean, generally they don't. They don't blow up on your head and kill you, but driving in a car is...
Samsung.
yeah. That's spicy. For all you Samsung users out there, bad move. But yeah, you know what I mean? It's true. Like... a car can kill you.
Yeah,
in a lot of different ways.
It's a great point. Like, you know, computers and phones at the end of the day are just gizmos, right? Like, what's the worst case scenario? I mean, obviously, you get hacked, it can be bad, right? Depending on who you are.
You can lose all your money, blah, blah, blah.
What information
all your nudes.
You get. Yeah, but here we're talking about something that, like, you know...
life or death.
Yeah, life or death.
And the other question is as well, you know, you said earlier, like, oh, probably this won't happen. It's unlikely. But then... you look at something like the Boeing crashes that just happened, and these weren't hacks, but this was software related.
It was a software bug, yeah.
It was a software related thing, and the company clearly, it looks like, at least the allegations are, that it really was shortcutting a lot of things in order to sell these planes quicker. So, you know, how could this not happen with cars? It's something to think about.
Yeah, I mean, maybe I'm just being optimistic or skeptic or, you know, I'm putting too much faith into these giant corporations. I mean, the hope is that, you know, these are companies with a lot of money. So hopefully they understand the risks and they understand that, you know, even just one person dying from a software bug, it's a huge cost. So just think about how much bad press Uber got when their self-driving car crashed and killed someone in the US. Is that worth the extra software development that you need? Is it worth, you know, the security searches that you have to pay? I mean, I think so. I mean, obviously, I don't have a budget. I don't have a company. It's easy for me to say. But, like, again, we're talking, as you said, we're talking about life and death. Like, something like this is a PR nightmare. You know, like, somebody's iPhone getting hacked is a PR nightmare that you can control, right? It's not that bad. But, like, somebody's car getting hacked and them dying or killing someone because the brakes don't work or something, that's like, you know, that's front page news for days.
I mean, call me crazy and a Luddite or something, but, you know, when that Boeing stuff happened, it did make me think about how willing we are to let software sort of overtake the human operator in some of these very key places. You know what I mean? Like, it's And trust me, I definitely trust technology and understand technology, and it's going to get better and better where even the human operator will be outmatched. But in these early stages, it seems like we are prone to these lapses and in the actual the mechanics of this type of software.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, to go back to the story, we don't know exactly why this password was set to 123456, but my explanation, and I'm guessing, I guess, and or speculating, is that it's kind of simply it's the simple way to do it, right? Like, you just give every user the same password, and that way you don't have to
pay for some sort of password generating.
Yeah, I don't know. It just makes it simpler, right? So if you're cutting corners like that, those are the risks, though. And as you said, yeah, like, especially at the beginning when we're putting the internet on these devices and maybe we're not thinking about it, it's very dangerous. But the problem is that I don't think things are going to get necessarily better as we understand the technology more, because the more we put software on these, you know, machines like cars or even airplanes, it's going to get more complex. And with more complexity, there will be more bugs. And with more bugs, there will be more hacks. So the key to all this is to really think about what you want to put, like the features that you want to put on your machines very carefully. Like, do you want the plane engine to be connected to the internet? Like, probably not. Like, I can't think of a good reason, right? So, yeah, same thing with the car engine. Should it be connected to the internet? I don't know. Like, why would it be? Unless it's a self-driving car and you want to take it over remotely. Even in the case of, like, a stolen car, like, I mean, I understand that killing the engine in that case can help, but I don't know. It's still like, what are the trade-offs, right? Like, I'd rather not have the internet connected to my car engine and accept the risk that if it gets stolen, I may not find it.
Well, on that gloriously happy note, I think we can end the podcast. Thank you, Lorenzo.
Thank you,
producer,
for having me.
Producer, interviewee.
I have a double hat today.
Just shameless self-promotion is what this is.
Yeah. That's... I actually paid you to have me on the podcast.
Finally,
no,
someone
that's
pays
a joke,
me for this
by the way,
thing.
To listeners.
It's not. He actually did. Anyway, okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
This week's episode was recorded by John Northcraft, edited by Sophie Casis, produced by Lorenzo Franceschi Bikirai, and hosted by me, Ben Maku. We'll see you next week.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.